Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction industry. Everything from large mega haunts to home haunts to everything in between, whether you're an actor or owner or just plain aficionado, we hope this is a good podcast for you. So we are back again with another one of our wonderful, esteemed, highly acclaimed Haunt Weekly podcasts.
Now you're just making stuff up.
Me? Lie. What a podcast.
Steamed, yeah, right.
Well, maybe steamed, but maybe not steamed, but steamed, definitely.
Oh, gotcha.
But yes, good to be sitting down again to talk haunty type stuff with you again.
Yes.
Been looking forward to this for a while. We're actually recording a bit early this week.
Yeah, but they don't know that.
They don't. Well, they were going to be telling them in a minute anyway what's going on. So anyways, this week's show is all about backstory, and we're going to be getting to that in a minute. We have a few announcements and a few odds and ends we're going to take care of, but all about backstory and why you should write something for your damn haunt.
Yep.
Basically, right? And why a paragraph blurb on your site is not enough.
No, not really.
But first, we do have a few, I guess you would call them, PSA type things to go through.
Sure.
First off, once again, we talked about it last week, talking about it again because this will be going live just before the start of Transworld Halloween and Attraction Show. And I find it interesting, I'm looking at their site, the logo, it's Halloween ampersand Attraction Show, yet the abbreviation is HAAS. So you think they would just, you know, have like the and spelled out so you can see what... I'm reading too much into this, aren't I?
Maybe a little bit.
A little bit, okay. But anyways, obviously haunt the... Halloween and Interaction Show in the America Center in St. Louis, Missouri, March 17th through the 20th. Lots of awesome stuff going on. We will not be able to attend for reasons we will go into in just a minute.
Right. I've been checking up on some of the vendors who have been there in the past and looking at the photos and drooling and wishing that we would going to be there, but it's just not possible.
Mistakes were made in planning this year.
Yeah, maybe next
maybe not.
Year.
Maybe next year. Maybe not mistakes, but you know.
Yeah.
Not good judgment. But coming to our hometown of New Orleans, Transworld is bringing an Escape to New Orleans event. It is an escape room tour. It is May 27th to 28th, 2016. I don't know why I added the year. That was kind of silly.
Maybe people from the future would like to know when this happened.
If so, tell us about the cyborgs. I'm dying to know. Send us a message in your space pod. But yes, it is an escape room tour. They will, and attendees of this show will be visiting four separate escape rooms over a two-day period. They'll be visiting the 13th Gate Room Escapes, which we actually did one of those games.
Yes.
Clou Carrie, a French Quarter New Orleans escape game. The Mystery, and that's M-Y-S-T-E-R-E escape rooms. That is at the Mortuary Haunted Attraction here in New Orleans.
Right.
And Rise escape room up in Hammond, or near-ish Hammond.
Yeah.
In that area.
Which must be something new, because I don't remember seeing it advertised when we were there in October.
Yeah, it is fairly new. I remember hearing about it
recently, somewhere.
Yeah, when we were visiting with the haunty people at karaoke.
There or at Hong Kong?
I think both, actually. I think you're right on both.
Yeah, I think whenever I went to the Rise presentation.
Yeah, I know I've heard it mentioned a couple of times. Unfortunately, we can't go to that either.
Yeah.
The reason is the two-day tour is $320 a person, and yeah, we're broke.
Well,
maybe not broke. That's an exaggeration. Okay. But the point is, that's $640 for us to go, and
just for the two of us.
Just for the two of us, and we can't go. I mean, it's that simple. We have other things we have to do, and we have that's like half the budget for our haunt every year.
Yeah, pretty much.
They're going to that. I would love to go. I would love to check out these room escapes. I'm endlessly fascinated with Room Escapes, and we are working to put together a great show on Room Escapes.
Mm-hmm.
We will be coming more on that soon. But in the meantime, yeah, sorry, we're not going to go, even though it's in our backyard, quite literally. So that's a little frustrating. But yeah, not going to Trans World, I think, is the bigger sin on our part. And the reason we're not going is my fault.
It's why we're recording early.
Yeah, it's why we're recording early. We're getting ready to leave tomorrow evening. We're recording on Wednesday. We're going to leave to go to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas.
Right.
I speak on the 15th, and those playing along know that Trans World begins on the 17th, and I intend to be still probably hungover.
And if anyone is in the Austin area and wants to meet up, please reach out to us. Let us know. Why you would be at Southwest, but I'm not sure why you wouldn't be either, because it's got some cool stuff.
We just did a whole damned episode about tech and haunting, and it was awesome. And South By, especially the interactive, is all about tech. Anyways. And I'm not going to drop it, okay? I'm not dropping it. And I've got the name for this episode, too. So you shut up. Just sit down right now. Well, you are sitting. But you can continue sitting. And just deal with it.
All right, so South By.
South By, yes.
If you're in the area for it, or just, you know, live around
there. Will be arriving sometime on the 11th. We don't know exactly when. Right. And we'll be there through my talk on the 15th. My talk's early in the morning on the 15th. I'll be doing a panel on web scraping and the legality of it. That's my day job as a copyright and plagiarism consultant, ethicist, not lawyer, but law talking dude.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. That fits in with my day job.
You're a law translator.
Yeah, I'm a law. I like that. I'm plagiarizing that. Law translator. Pulling out the laptop here and writing it down.
Oh.
That's a great idea. So, yeah, that's what we've got there. So, yeah, definitely if you are in the Austin area, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
So, baby got backstory. You knew it was coming. So, baby got backstory. And this, once again, we're playing the game of what have we been longer than Haunters?
Yeah.
And I think both of us have a lengthy background with writing.
Yes.
I think me maybe a little more so than you, but not by much.
Yeah, that would be, I don't know, I'm older than you. So
I wasn't gonna tell anyone. You admitted that on your own free will.
That's fine. I still look younger.
Oh. Son of a bitch. Call me one of those podcasts. I don't know what it is.
Apparently. Anyway.
Should I make fun of your tiny hands?
No, that's probably not necessary.
Tiny frigid hands? She does have frigid hands.
Yeah.
That part's true. I don't know about tiny. I've never actually compared hands.
The answer is no.
Anyways. But yeah. We both have extensive backgrounds in writing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you've been doing it as long as I have, but, you know, you shifted gears at right around college, in high school and college, to more visual art.
In college to visual art. Majored in visual art, minored in English. So still kept writing through it.
Yeah.
And I've been editing your stuff for years.
Hey.
So... It happens.
No, I mean, that's just it. Every writer needs an editor. And, you know, that's just it. You don't necessarily need an editor who's a better writer. You need an editor that's a better editor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And not all editors can write. I acknowledge that.
Yeah. I'm not saying you can. I'm just saying that not all editors can.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine. But anyways, backstory. And
back on track.
We have a track? We have a purpose with this show? I just killed 9 minutes of this podcast. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know.
No, but... So here's the thing. You know, we do run a small home haunt.
Right.
We don't have a lot of money to put into it.
No.
We try to put in as little as we can because we're broke and it's a free haunt. And we can't afford to go to an escape room conference in our own hometown.
No.
But anyways... So, one of the areas we've always invested in and have found really, really, really paid dividends
right.
has been backstory.
Yep.
And the first question I always get, or I hypothetically always get,
is like, why?
Why would you want...
Why do you need it?
Why do you want a backstory? Why can't I just put the damn haunt up and let the kids in, right, and that be it?
Well, let's have a static page with a spooky picture of a creepy guy.
The timer open and a map.
Yeah, that's and it. The dates were open.
And the dates were open. That's it. That's all you need. Schedule, times, dates, and you know, basically, play some background music, of course, because it's a haunted attraction website.
Let's have some lightning flashes.
some use the blink tag. Anybody old enough to remember the blink tag listening to this? I hope not.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. All
right.
Well, the first thing is, the first reason to have one is it separates your haunt from others.
Right.
On a fundamental level, all haunted attractions are doing kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
We're all bringing people in and we're trying to scare them in various ways using various techniques. And we are all pulling largely from the same bag of tricks.
Right.
So distinguishing yourself can be very difficult.
Right.
I mean, and one of the best ways to do that is by having a really, really good, memorable backstory. Something people hook onto. And like here in New Orleans, go ahead, we have the House of Shock, which of course has the whole Belial, Lord Belial and the Fourth Reich thing going down. And then we've got the Haunted Mortuary, which is a very different backstory.
Every year, they change it.
Yeah, and they've also got an overarching backstory of they are a haunted mortuary.
Loosely attached.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to them. Yeah. We're coming back to them.
Yeah.
I'm not letting anyone off the hook too easy this episode.
The other thing, touching on your day job,
yeah,
is that whenever you write your own backstory, nobody can take it and claim it as theirs.
Mm-hmm. That's really, really useful because, you know, it's just something that's you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people can take your scares, people can take, you know, your theme, people can take your atmosphere.
Right.
They can go and they can simulate that, but they cannot take your backstory.
Right.
A good backstory is perfect, and it is great for promotion.
Yes, it is.
And this is one of the things that is so valuable, because you can put your backstory and different variations of it, which we'll get into,
mm-hmm,
on everything that you produce. Whether it's a flyer / handbill you hand out, whether it's your TV commercial or your radio spot, mm-hmm, you can put it on there. And once again, that breeds consistency across your promotion.
Right.
And it's a free way to really distinguish your haunt and your marketing material from the others. Because here's the thing. When I go to Spirit... And every haunter goes a Spirit. No one.
We ran into some of you there.
This is a truth zone here. I'm not saying you buy stuff there. I'm not saying you get your stuff from there. I'm saying you go there at least once a season.
Yeah.
To see what's going down.
And if nothing else, to hang out your flyers.
Exactly. We're all there. Just shut up. Quit pretending you've never set foot inside of a Spirit. Let's move on. When you go to Spirit, you walk up to the front little thing where they got the flyers that you just mentioned.
Right.
All the flyers kind of wash together sometimes.
Yeah.
Spooky picture of mansion and a big gothic font.
Yeah.
You know, and to someone like, to me and you, you know, haunted aficionado types, we recognize, we spot those differences.
Yeah.
But to someone who doesn't know squat about haunts, it's like looking at death metal band logos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very, very tough to distinguish.
It's like, well, I like this one or not. Well, this picture's a little bit cooler than that one.
This one's got a more pointy font.
Yeah.
This one uses more blood drips.
Yeah. I can't even read this one. It's so cool.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where... So, it's a good thing to put on promotion because it's something that gives you an edge and makes you really stand out. So it also allows you to create a theme for your haunt.
Right.
And this is something that we find missing in a lot of haunts that we go to, is the haunt is just total scattershot.
Right. And even sometimes when they claim to have a theme, you can't really follow it.
Yeah.
You know, I do think that that is a thing, and I know we're getting into it more later, that's, you know, it's your designer and your writer working together.
Yeah. But this gives you a theme. This gives you a center, you know, axle from which the spokes of your design come out of.
Right.
And that can make your haunt so much more consistent.
Right.
Rather than, basically, what it gives you, and this is just simple truth, when that new guy on the haunt shows up and says, hey, I want to do a clown room.
Uh-huh.
You can look at him and go, it doesn't fit the backstory, man.
No, sorry.
Sorry, dude. I mean, it's an awesome idea. Totally would rock it if, you know...
If we didn't already have the backstory and the theme and everything set up.
Yeah, totally. It gives you veto power over ideas that don't fit in. And, you know, you can move those to other attractions. You can move those wherever you want. But the main thing is, it gives you a consistent theme you can run through your entire haunt. If you're smart about how you craft it, that's something. It allows you to create unique characters.
Yes.
This is important.
It is, because then people will be looking for those characters, especially if you do the thing where you take a picture of them when they're in makeup and then you put their backstory beside it, and then you've got a whole little section on your website devoted to your characters.
Yeah, I mean, we do this with our haunt. We have the main character of the haunt, Bernie Baxter. We're called Bernie Baxter.
Right.
It's literally the name of the haunt.
Yeah.
Bernie Baxter is the central character. I play that role. I'm out front every day we're open playing that character.
Yeah.
And I think I do an okay job.
Yeah.
Anyways, but the point is, that's a character, and it goes back to no one can take that from us.
Right.
No other haunt. If we decide to go pro, if we don't decide to go pro, if we shut down, whatever, no one can take that character from us.
Right.
That is ours. We invented him. We created him. We wrote a story. We own this.
Yeah.
This is ours.
And every year we create another story.
Yes. That goes inside the haunt. And we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
But the final thing I want to say, the final reason to have a backstory, and this is my personal favorite reason.
Uh-huh.
It's free!
Free?
Free!
Nothing's free.
And this is... Okay, technically it's not free because it does take a little time.
Right. And if someone doesn't know how to write a backstory, then
might
they might
take a longer
to hire someone.
Yes, but the point is...
But it's technically... It could be free.
It could very easily be free if you are a reasonably good writer. It doesn't take that much time. And here's the thing. A lot of the stuff you're going to do with this, like you're probably going to shoot a video.
Yep.
You were going to shoot a damn video for your haunt anyway.
Yeah.
The difference is you've actually got a script now.
Yeah, you know what's going to happen.
I mean... You were going to have front of house actors interacting with the crowd anyway. Well, now they've got something to say.
Right.
They've got something to talk about and jibby-jabby about.
No.
It's like so easy, and it's free, and it really tightens up all areas of the haunt. Now, what you were getting a little bit ahead on there was that there's two kinds of backstory.
Right.
We should specify this. The first is the backstory for the haunt itself.
Yes.
And to this, I kind of turn to the mortuary, because we mentioned them briefly.
Yeah.
They have the backstory of the mortuary.
Right.
Which is, we are an old mortuary, we're haunted.
Yes, this is the guy whose family has owned it for blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah. Yeah. And whole long story about the actual building. Some of it, I don't know if, I mean, honestly, I haven't researched it. Mm-hmm. I suspect there are fictionalized elements of it. It would not surprise me.
Yeah.
But they have a story about the building and about the place itself.
Right.
And that builds a lot of tension.
Yeah, and it is an actual old Jewish mortuary.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful building.
It is a very beautiful building.
It's worth going for just for the look at the building, because it's really pretty. Mm-hmm. But
You have the backstory of the haunt itself,
mm-hmm.
which is really critical, because the other is the backstory for the show you're doing.
Right.
This backstory, the second one, should change, maybe not every year, but regularly.
Yeah.
And the problem with it is, if you only have one backstory for everything, if the haunt and the show have the same backstory, every time you change the show, every time you change that and change the backstory, you have to scrap all that marketing that you did.
Right.
You have to take everything that you did and just make people forget it. In fact, you're not just scrapping, you're having to kind of undo it and reteach them.
Yeah, but I like haunts that do, you know, that build upon, at least, their season story.
And that can be done, and that's something that...
Yeah.
And this goes back to what the mortuary was doing For a series of about, what was it, 5-6 years
No, it was more like 3.
But that, well, they had a few years there in which the plot was literally a sequel to itself. It started, you know, I don't remember the full story now, but I remember first year it had a pretty interesting story. The second year they built on it directly.
Right.
Well, it was the Ravencroft series, if I remember correctly.
Well, it was the zombie outbreak, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Because it started with Patient Zero and zombies are getting loose, and then the military was infected the next year, and you were in like an apocalypse scenario.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because you, if you came by every year, you saw the evolution of the story, and the story was simple enough and memorable enough that you could follow it. The progression was obvious.
Right. I mean, we got there the second year and we were like, wow, they're doing a progressive story. This is really cool and awesome. Mm-hmm. Come back the next year. It was completely different.
Yeah, then they threw it out. But one advantage they have is since they do have that backstory about the mortuary itself,
right,
they don't have to completely throw out everything.
Right.
They've got that touchstone, that linchpin that they can continue to use. But yeah, I agree with you. When they ditched the plot, and they ditched it early, I felt.
Yeah.
I understand sometimes a story runs its course and you've got to start anew.
Right.
But A, they didn't start anew with a new multi-part plot.
Right.
And B, it felt like they dropped it just as it was getting interesting.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is that if you're going to change your story, or when you change your story, not if you're going to, you should change your story, your season story. So when you change it, remember to make sure that the scares still make sense in that setting.
Yeah.
Because I'm tired of the freaking chainsaw. I'm sorry, guys.
You know,
it's not always appropriate.
I agree, but I gotta say, it's gotten to a point where every time I go to a haunt and there's not a chainsaw, which is admittedly very rare, people seem disappointed by it. Not me. I'm quite ecstatic, but
yeah.
I don't get, I mean, I remember that for a while there, the House of Shock had this thing where they would just do the chainsaw hedge man, chainsaw maze.
Yeah.
Randomly out of nowhere.
Well,
you want chainsaws? Here's some chainsaws.
Okay. So here's the thing. If you're going to keep your chainsaw at the end to run him out, at least put that guy in a costume that fits the rest of the story, not the same costume every year.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that done.
Yeah.
And it's annoying.
So, now that we know there's two kinds of backstories.
Yes.
The conversation shifts to, well, what the hell makes a good one?
No, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I hope you do. I wrote it down for you.
I was playing someone who wouldn't know.
Okay. Well, the first thing in my mind is it has to be original.
Yes.
And I mean that both from like a copyright and legal standpoint.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Looking at you guys who know who you are.
Don't bust out Freddy and Jason, A. And B, don't have a plot that just seems like a close ripoff of another movie.
Right.
Like, you sometimes will see, and this seems to be a common thing.
Schlockula.
Yeah. Well, this seems to be a common thing, honestly, in haunts that are outdoors, like the trail haunts and so forth.
Right.
Where they will do, they'll basically rip off Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Group of kids goes into the cabin, reads from some evil book. I'm like, okay, guys. Really? A, even if you're not ripping off Evil Dead, you're ripping off a trope that is hopelessly abused now.
Right.
And frankly, if Bruce Campbell isn't here, I'm going to be disappointed.
No.
But it has to also be believable and relatable. And this can be tricky.
It can be. We found.
Yeah.
That one of the best ways to do this is to look at your local legends.
Yes. And I guarantee you, you have local legends.
Yes. At HauntCon, I met someone who was thinking of opening a haunt, and they had a very original local legend involving a chicken, and that's all I'm going to say about it, because they're still writing their story.
You know what? It was a pretty damn scary legend, though, you got to admit.
It was.
Wiped out
an entire town. A chicken wiped out an entire town.
You know, that's one badass chicken, man. It's Cluck Norris.
Oh, God.
Moo yeah!
That kind of podcast. All right. So anyway, it's other ways to make it believable and relatable. Yeah,
look to your local history. Look to your local legends. And play to the area that you're in. Play to what's going on. If you have a haunt that's in a warehouse or industrial area,
right?
There's all kinds of scary crap you can come up with for that type of area. Yep. If you're a haunt attraction in the wilderness, come on. Yeah. If you can't think of something, I can't help you. Stop listening right now. Close your haunt and just go do something else.
Yeah.
Find another hobby.
Now, there is one word of caution with making it believable and relatable.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go further back in history instead of more recent.
Yeah. And that's for two reasons. People know their recent history a lot better and will call bull when you take your inevitable liberties with the history. The other is you can hit some raw nerves.
Yeah.
Like, we're in New Orleans. We had a little spot of bad weather in 2005.
Yeah.
We do a lot of haunt themes based upon post-hurricane stories.
Right.
We've not done one based upon Katrina, obviously. No. And we probably will not.
No.
But it's okay, because in like the 1960s, there was Betsy. And then for 20 years before that, there was another. And then there was another. So it's like there's no shortage of hurricanes without using the one that everyone has the bad memories about.
Right.
So, and that was just it. We actually did use Hurricane Betsy, I think it was, in one of them.
Yeah, I can't remember which one.
No, that was Mama's Mob. It was the displaced people after the storm. And we did that, and it actually went very, very well as a theme.
Yeah.
Because, and part of it was because people with Katrina remembered some of these things happening after Hurricane, even if they didn't remember it happening after Betsy, it was easy to realize it, but we weren't recalling the specific memories of Katrina. No, now, the House of Shock went straight for the jugular, I think, in 2007 when they returned? 2008, whichever year it was, they returned and immediately started mentioning Katrina in their stage show.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Look, you can't call the House of Shock out on poor taste. That's like, you know,
that's what they're trying to
do. That's like, you know, calling out, you know, the Daily Show and making fun of politicians. It's what they do. It's their livelihood. And so it's not calling them out or anything. It's just we can't do that.
Right. And people can't.
Most people can. A good backstory should also be very concise, I think.
Yeah, it should be able to pick up easily.
You're not writing a freaking novel, man. You're not writing a TV miniseries.
Unless you want to write the really long version of a novel and then sell it to people.
And that's perfectly fine, but just remember, it's got to be able to be pared down enough to be communicated very, very quickly, as we're going to talk about. It should only have a few characters. I mean, I'm sorry. In the next up, it should be, we can do them out of order, but it has to be varied. It has to open itself up to multiple possibilities. And this is where things get a little trickier sometimes, because it has to be concise and that you've got to be able to tell the story fairly quickly and communicate what the heck is going on.
Right.
But it's got to be varied enough so that you can fill a whatever size haunt you have with enough interesting crap.
Right.
To keep people from getting bored and going, yep, another castle room.
Yeah. Been here. Also let it grow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You need something with that buffer. And, you know, I find a lot of time, sometimes the easiest way to do this is honestly to start delving into the supernatural a little bit. Have people with powers to transport and to change things into things. Once you get into that type of stuff in your backstory, you open up a whole new world. It's still concise. People understand. Demon can turn room into evil places.
Yeah.
That's easy to understand, but it also means you can have lots of different evil places.
Right.
You have to play by certain rules. You're setting boundaries for yourself, but you're not placing hard limits either.
Yeah.
It's not all going to be castle, laboratory, you know, dungeon type stuff. You've got some room there to have some variations. Ideally, it should only have a few characters.
Yeah.
And I say that, A, is part of conciseness.
Right.
But also because any characters you put into your backstory better damn well be in front of or in your haunt.
Yeah. And they need a pretty prominent role. Yeah. Even if it's at the very end, like the big reveal in a horror film, you know, how they keep working up to the monster and then at the very end you finally see him and he's all that more terrifying.
Yeah. If you have too many characters, suddenly you've got too many required roles.
Yep.
And your haunt just becomes a cluttered mess. And if people, you don't have all the actors you need, you know, you can't fill these required jobs. You know, if you have non-essential characters, if someone's missing, okay, a scare might not be getting triggered, but the show goes on.
Right.
But if you can't fill a key character of your story, you're screwed. It's a noticeable admission. A noticeable admission.
Yeah.
Like I said, it has to be open-ended enough for the haunt. The story itself has to be open-ended, basically, is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
The idea is this, and my personal belief is this. It's a back story. The word back refers to back in time.
Mm-hmm.
This is what led up to your haunt.
Yeah.
Your haunt is the sequel to whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the reenactment.
Right.
You want reenactment, go to the Civil War battlefields or whatever. They'll happily reenact stuff that happened in the past for you.
Right.
What we want is a sequel. And the reason for that is, if you just reenact the story, people who read the story, and some people will know exactly what's coming every step of the way, every punch. They might not know every scare, but they're going to know, okay, now we transition to this room. Now we transition to this room. I expect to be in this room.
Right.
It's going to be very predictable for them. If you make it a sequel, basically you've given them one story, and then they got to pay, you know, 12, 15, 25, 30, 50, whatever bucks to come visit the sequel.
Right.
That's how it works in my head.
I can see that.
Okay.
It also allows for the decay of characters.
Yes. It does. And that's one thing that it can be kind of important is Mac stories typically take place at a point in the characters' lives where they are alive.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And younger and so forth. And of course, alive, young, sexy people, while possibly very attractive, are not usually very scary unless you're like in a Banana Republic or something, at which point they're just terrifying.
All right.
To each their own with what makes you feel afraid. Yeah. Okay. Now, a backstory, ideally, should be condensed to be able to be condensed to three formats.
Mm-hmm.
First, you need an elevator pitch. This is what I call an elevator, or maybe a hellevator pitch.
Aha! Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've heard other industries call it elevator pitch also.
But the elevator pitch basically is a 30-second version of your story. This is ideal for any front-of-house actors.
Right.
Who need a speaking role.
It's also ideal for people that you have on the ground handing out flyers around town.
Exactly.
It's your 30-second backstory.
Anytime you've got, you know, interaction with a customer or potential customer, it has to be super brief. It can even be the ticket booth guy.
Right.
Or girl. I'm not here to say all your ticket booth people have to be men. But your ticket booth people can have this version of the story. Mm-hmm. Everyone who touches a customer for longer than 30 seconds should be able to recite this version, at very least if they're asked.
Right.
Your front of house actors may be, you know, sort of forcing it down people's throats a little more, telling it to them, entertaining them, keeping them, you know, happy while they're in line.
Make sure to say hi to Vincent.
Exactly. But everyone should be able to tell this version.
Right.
Now, then there's the YouTube pitch, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 2 to 4 minute version that is both ideal for an online video, but also for a short blurb on a website or marketing content like flyers and so forth.
Newspaper ads. Yeah.
Anything that's got a little more room than the elevator pitch version, but not as much, room as, say, you know, a book, basically.
Right.
It sits somewhere in between. This version gets a little more detail. It discusses things a little more. Does a little more setup, character development. but it's still a brief overview. You're not going to get into like every little technical detail. You're not going to get into dialogue. You're not going to tell, you know, the full robust version of this story. And that version is also great, like I said, for YouTube versions, your site, and anywhere else. And then you have the full version. This can be as long as you damn well please.
No.
In fact, for some haunts, I think the YouTube pitch probably is the full version, honestly.
Yeah, I think that that's what most people go with. But whenever I went to, you know, the Haunt Con session by Scott Swenson about other ways to sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Creating a backstory in a book that's, you know, like you can sell at your vendor table, why not?
Yeah, and print-on-demand publishing is surprisingly affordable right now. Yeah.
So,
and sell Kindle copies too, why not? Because that's free to you.
No.
And that's just free money at that point.
Exactly.
If anyone's going to buy a Kindle copy of your story, it's just free money. Yeah, this full version, this can be as long as you want it to be. I think it's a good idea to have this, even if you don't publicize it or publish it.
Right.
Just because it gives you a touchstone, you and your actors and everyone that works in the haunt, a touchstone for what to do inside the haunt.
Right.
It sets the mood, it sets the demeanor, it sets the expectation, it sets the characters, it sets the room, it sets everything up, and it serves as kind of a Bible. For mm-hmm. those inside the haunt to follow. And, you know, for me, it's a lot of work to do this type of full version, but it really, really can pay off if you do a very good version. Because like I said, you got something to sell, but you've also got a really good connection there for your actors and your builders and everyone else. Now, right. Here's the challenging part. We finally come to the apex of our conversation. Working the damn thing into your haunt. Working the backstory into the haunt.
Right.
This is the part a lot of places seem to forget.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we've got this cool story. Look at this cool prop I just found.
Yeah. Yeah, and like a lot of haunts I actually really like.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of screw this up. House of Shock has their very famous backstory.
Yeah.
It doesn't come into play until the very end of the haunt.
Well, yeah. At least this year.
At least this year. And also,
It was more in play before, but it still kind of wasn't.
And
13th Gate, I'm trying to think of what their backstory actually is.
Yeah, and that they don't really have one, not much of one that I can recall. And one of the things about them is they're an example of a great haunt being able to overcome doing both the consistency and the backstory thing incompletely.
Yeah, now I will tell you that when they do have a little bit of backstory, like the Jack the Ripper that they've been running the past couple
years. Yeah, they run backstories over sections.
Right, over sections, and that's kind of like their main focus area. It was disappointing.
Yeah.
Because you expect it to go on for longer, and it doesn't. Well, anyway.
Well, real fast, while we're still on the topic of area haunts, I think the most unfortunate one for backstory is still the mortuary. Last year's, they had a really muddled backstory.
Well, the story wasn't that muddled, I don't think.
Okay.
Because it was the seven deadly sins. The problem was, when you got into the haunt, the design of it, you could not tell that that's what the story was.
Well, and it's...
Except for in, like, two of the seven rooms.
It's too much to hold into your head. The seven deadly sins, that's seven characters, that's... It's a lot to try and process while you're making your way through a haunted house and trying to be scared.
Right.
And, I mean, I can barely remember my seven deadly sins on a good day.
Well, yeah. And this is, you know, this is one of those things that, as someone who designs a large portion of the inside of the haunt, I get the story first.
Yes.
I say, get me this story so that I can start working.
Yeah, and this is the designing your haunt to the backstory thing.
Right. Instead of designing your backstory to the props that you just bought.
Yeah. Which, see, this is kind of the thing. I think definitely you should design your haunt to the backstory. Because you need to make sure that the haunt, that the theme carries through the haunt.
Right.
But part of that is the person writing it needs to be conscious of the limitations of the haunt.
Right.
Because every haunt with a budget, which is every haunt, has things they have.
Right.
Things they can obtain.
No.
And things they don't have and cannot obtain.
Right.
If I go and I write the most awesome backstory ever, but I fill it full of stuff that we don't have and can't obtain.
Right.
It doesn't do any good.
Yeah.
You're just going to have, you're going to have an immediate disconnect between the attraction and the story.
Right.
So whoever is writing the story needs to be someone with an awareness and a knowledge level of what the haunt can do.
Right.
And that's really, really important. And I think of this as like the team effort. Your job as a designer is to design the haunt, the backstory.
Yeah.
My job is to write the backstory around what the haunt is capable of.
Right.
And then we meet.
Yeah, we meet regularly during this process to make sure that you're not saying stuff that I can't pull off.
Yeah. Don't, you know, if you don't have like crazy animatronic skills,
yeah,
maybe writing a backstory about large giant spiders is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Maybe you should keep it a little more human.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things where you have to be aware of your limitations. When trying to bring it in, I find the most helpful thing is to find key characters and key scenes.
Right.
And replicate them.
Yeah. Yeah, and that does really tie it in. And like I was saying earlier, you can build up to the big reveal at the end.
Yeah.
And
I mean, it's one of those things where when I do a backstory or I see a backstory, mm-hmm. I'm going through it and I'm like, okay, something happened in a room with a fireplace.
Right.
I'm making this up as I go, so
yeah.
Bear with me. But something happens to this character in a room with a fireplace.
Yeah.
I damn well expect to see a room with a giant fireplace in it somewhere in the haunt.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a key scene in the story, it needs to be in the haunt. If there's a key character in there, it needs to be in the haunt. Now, like I said, you're writing the sequel.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean you have to replicate it exactly as it happened in the story, but you have to have those elements in there. Otherwise, people go, well, where's the fireplace? They went on and on about this giant fireplace that they burned someone up in, and it totally wasn't there. There was no fireplace.
Yeah.
That's all they're going to say.
Yes, in that instance, they would be walking through that fireplace.
Yeah.
You know, you give me that scene to decorate, they're walking through the fireplace.
Get the concrete molds, make some columns, a fake fire of the firelight. Yeah. Knock it out, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
you've got to have those elements in there or it's just going to drive people crazy.
Yeah.
Now, other key elements to match.
Mm-hmm.
Time period.
Yeah.
What the hell? I've been to some haunts that have screwed this one up. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, I think one of the ones that was more frustrating was, and I hate to say it, was Rise. Because Rise has the backstory, if you watch the little video thing,
right,
is set in like the 1950s or 60s or so.
Yeah.
It's a mad scientist from the 20th century. Then you get in there, and there are rooms that are clearly way more modern and way older.
Yeah, their backstory doesn't go with their design
at all.
Pretty much at all.
Now, they've got a great design.
Yeah.
They've just got to find a way to write a backstory that plays to it. And I can make it work something out. But it's one of those situations where you've got to match the time period. Holy hell, this seems like the easy one to me.
Yes, if you are going to make the time period a prominent thing.
Yes, especially, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't set something in the 1930s and then have it loaded with medieval castles.
Yes. Because of that, I would love to go to Vault of Souls if we ever got the chance.
Yes.
And see how well they put this in. Because it sounds like they do a great job.
Yeah, it does. The location is important.
Yes.
Now, your haunt, the best location for your backstory is where you're at.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you can get away with moving the backstory to another place.
Yeah.
I've seen several haunts, at least I'm aware of several haunts outside of New Orleans that have New Orleans themes.
Right.
It makes sense. We're a spooky town, man. What do you want?
Yeah, everybody wants to be New
Everyone
Orleans.
Everyone wants to be us, even Key West. But it's weird, but if you have a New Orleans theme, you'd better damn well have some fleur-de-lis and some immediately recognizable New Orleans stuff in there.
New Orleans Cemetery.
New Orleans Cemetery, Mardi Gras stuff.
And
yeah, it's cliche, but
Okay, so basically, I think it would actually be easier to get away with a New Orleans themed haunt in a place that has a lot of people not that familiar with New Orleans.
It would be much easier. You just throw in a bunch of cliches, and everyone would go, "Yep, that was New Orleans." And
yep.
It's just kind of like how down here, if we did one about Salem, Massachusetts,
yeah,
we would just totally throw in some, you know, Crucible type stuff, and everyone would swallow it.
Yep.
So that's fine.
We'll just watch the TV show and play the game, and we'll get it from there.
Yeah, that's fine by me. Yep. Long and short of it, it is easier, but I still think it's much tighter to have your theme, your backstory related to your location, because it adds to that believability.
Well, that, and you're already starting off with part of a local legend.
Yeah. And the other thing is just, people are scared of what's around them.
Yeah.
They just are.
Yeah.
We're kind of a weird like that as a species. I'm not nearly as scared of what's in Salem.
Yeah.
As I am what's in New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I can understand that, yeah.
So, the urban legends, the going on that ghost tour with Kyle, that stuff is way more unnerving to me than the horrible stuff that happened in Salem.
Right.
Because that's like thousands of miles away, dude. I think I got my distance on that.
Yeah, they're not going to come and get you from there.
No, exactly. The feeling or mood, if you have a theme or a backstory that's fairly silly.
Right.
Having a morose, over-the-top, dark, heavy theme in the haunt doesn't work.
No,
if you have an over-the-top, morose, dark, murderous theme.
And everything's pink and bright and bubbly.
Yeah, unless, you know, you're playing with some Uncanny Valley stuff, which can be really creepy. Like a children's room that's all torn up and that. Then you can do that. But the point is, the theme has to match the tone. You can do a lot. And I really do wish more haunts would mess with humor.
Right.
For some reason in this industry, we seem to think having humor in the haunt is this mortal sin.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it is.
No.
But I believe it has to be used intelligently. But I would love to see a haunt with a more humorous backstory. I'm not aware of any. But, make sure whatever your mood is that you're setting the backstory, that mood carries through.
Right.
And finally, it's got to be consistent throughout the haunt. This is some. Now, here's the thing. And I talked about varied themes.
Mm-hmm.
And how important that was. Here's the reason. If you're doing a 600-square-foot haunt, like ours.
Yeah.
That's not much of a challenge.
No.
I can write any old backstory I want any old day of the week, and there's plenty for us to work with to fill our haunt and make it nice and consistent and pretty.
Right.
But flip the script a little bit and give me a 5,000 square foot haunt, you're going to have to get a little more imaginative with your theme and your backstory
right.
in order to have something that works for the entire haunt. Now, one thing, and this is something that Glenda Pickle and others talk about, maybe you should be breaking your haunt up.
Yeah. Well, and I think that if you go back to your idea of the key rooms and characters,
yeah.
if you spread those out throughout yes. your haunt at key intervals, then it's easier to make it feel consistent throughout.
Yeah. And that's one of those things is, you know, you take those key rooms, those key elements, and not just spread them out, but, you know, make it not just one room.
Right.
You've got the fire, like the study with the fireplace idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why not expand it into a larger library?
No.
Have a whole library sequence and just have that be like the very center of that.
Right.
You know, that's an example of how you could pull it off. You just take the theme you have and expand it. But yeah, it's got to remain consistent throughout the haunt. And this is something I find really frustrating with a lot of very good haunts. Is they will start out following the theme, follow the script, and then lose the plot.
Yep.
Just somewhere about halfway through, it's like, well, we've done everything we can with the story. Clowns it is.
Yeah. Clowns and chainsaws.
Clowns and chainsaws. That's what this is going to be about. And finally, I truly believe the backstory should be very, very collaborative.
Yeah.
Everyone from your actors to your designers needs to be involved in this.
Right.
And that the reason for that is you want everyone on the same flipping page.
Yeah.
That simple. Now we got a few minutes left before we have to shut this down.
Mm-hmm.
What are some haunts that you think have done a really good job with a backstory?
with the backstory.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Well, I think that the mortuary, the 2 years that they did.
2 or 3 years.
The consistent one.
That was cool. That really worked
well. That worked well. And it was a consistent theme pretty much throughout. There was a couple of rooms that were off. But it was mostly consistent.
I try to have a little forgiveness with the mortuary on those issues because they're in the historic building.
And they're a teardown haunt.
And they're a teardown haunt. So they're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
In that area. And it's not entirely their fault. There's some ways they could probably do better. But yeah, I give slack is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for me personally, I think my favorite use of backstory and bringing it into a haunt was actually The Abyss at Lenton Brewery.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too, but then I was trying to think of any specifics from the backstory, and I couldn't.
Well, that was just it. They didn't really have too much in the way of specifics. They didn't do like the three versions of the backstory like we talked, but they did have a very general backstory that created an air of mystery around it, and that was what was exciting.
Right, it's basically just the history of the brewery,
yeah,
right?
It was basically
the
history.
The owner.
Yeah, and they left off, you know, the end part.
Right.
Where it was like bought by a haunted attraction. And
yeah.
They stopped the story at the right time is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I really thought that was actually a pretty good use of a minimal backstory. Because it produced some mystery. It made me intrigued. And it really got me wanting to go to it and see what it was about. And they were able to keep it. The theme and the feeling of it throughout. So I thought that was pretty solid.
Yeah.
That's one of the things. It's really hard to nail down haunts that have done a really good job with backstory.
Yeah. Because a lot of haunts just say, we're a haunted house.
Yeah. I mean, there's
we're spooky, we're scary, that's it. That's our backstory.
I mean, like, Chamber of Horrors, a haunt, you know, we volunteered at, had no backstory.
Yeah.
That I can remember.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to look that one up.
I'd have to look it up too, but I don't recall any backstory.
House of Shock has a good backstory.
Has a great backstory.
Yeah.
But not... An implementation of it that I find confusing at times.
Yeah.
Inconsistent. Yeah, and I'm realizing as I'm talking, I might be missing some of the point. But...
Yeah, a little bit, probably.
I'm probably missing something of the point here, but... Yeah, it's, you know, all about you're joining Belial's army. Welcome, my people.
Yeah.
Walk through this cemetery. Well, first and last year, walk through this freak show and then the cemetery.
Yeah, well, last year they tried something different.
And I applaud that, by the way.
I applaud that very much.
It worked,
you know?
I thought it worked overall pretty well. It's just, yeah. We're talking exclusively backstory with this.
Right. Well, and that's it, is that their backstory was so... well-known and tight fit that they kind of got pigeonholed into it and weren't able to grow out of it.
Yeah, and I think that may be the real danger of having maybe too good or too compelling of a backstory.
Right.
Is that you do risk being typecast, and that's what happened to Thou Sark. Now, mind you, that's a great problem because it took them, like, well, you know, 30 years or so?
Over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
We'll agree on that.
Over 20 years... to really have that problem come home to roost.
Right.
But, you know, so it's a good problem to have. Most haunts would kill for a guaranteed 20-year run.
Yeah, but I mean, even with a good backstory that stays consistent, the season theme still needs to change.
So. Yes, and that was one of the things House of Shock didn't do, was it didn't have much variation in the story year to year, especially during the later years we've been going. So, you know, backstory isn't easy. It's not necessary for a great haunt, obviously, because we've been talking about great haunts this whole time that have weak backstories.
Right.
It's kind of the punchline to the joke. But here's the thing. A backstory is free, and with so few haunts doing it, it's a really good chance to stand out.
Right.
So just think about it. All right?
That's it.
On that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 15. All about Baby Got Backstory. We're coming back to you next week after we return from South By with the news. See you then.